since this is your home, obviously you remain here not just because of home ties. I mean, what is it that keeps you here? You have the ability to go pretty much anywhere you want. So why do you stay in the Virginia, D.C. area?
Well, Ben, because I've always lived in the, pretty much, since about 1940, I've lived in this area. This is my home area.
Right.
I've lived in the district, I've lived in Maryland, and I've lived in Virginia. So I'm not one of those people who lives in Maryland, can't find his way around in Virginia. Pretty much find my way around in all three places. So, and when I travel, people say, where are you from? I typically say Washington, even though I may be living in, like now I'm living in McLean, for example. But I was born overseas. My father was a diplomat, and but we settled here, so we lived here through World War II. I went to schools, all local schools here, graduated from Georgetown, and this is my home. Now, with my career was CIA, 35 years in CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and with that career, I traveled a great deal, and I like to travel. I've lived abroad, upwards of 12, 13 years or so. But this is home for me. I have children born abroad, but actually they all live around this area now. I have a couple in Virginia and a couple in Maryland. So this is very much a home area for me.
Okay. Speaking of having lived abroad for so long, and you've lived in, obviously, a lot of different cities, including Europe, are there any cities that... are there any cities internationally that have the same appeal or the same dynamic or environment that D.C. does?
I think every city or most of the big cities we think of, Paris, Berlin, London, and so forth, they have their personalities. I mean, if you're in them for any length of time, there's a look that the people have, there's a way the traffic moves, there's an atmospherics, if you will, and many things play into that, whether it's the weather, and it may be very bad weather, but I think that cities have a personality. I think Washington has a personality, and I think that sometimes gets lost in the people focus on the political. I mean, right now we're going through a transition because we've elected a new president,
right?
And but that's exciting, and it's exciting for the nation, but it's particularly exciting here in Washington because it's happening here. But I think being a world capital and increasingly, certainly World War II and beyond, in other words, the last half of the last century, very much a player on the world stage, I think as a citizen of Washington, and I mean that by greater Washington, you tend to follow events more closely. You are more interested in world affairs, current events, than I think people who, and this isn't to disparage anybody, but I just think it sort of goes with living here.
Okay. Well, how would you describe the personality of the city, or the area?
Well, I think it was Kennedy who described it as a southern city with northern charm, something, or northern efficiency, I think, something to that effect. Part of what marks the city, of course, are the many monuments, historical monuments. But more than monuments, which, and many of them have a life to their own, like the Lincoln Memorial, but more than monuments, things happen here. This is where it goes on. Congress is where things, where the legislation is hammered out. The Supreme Court is where these landmark cases are brought to the bar. And these things are going on right under our noses. And because we live here, we get news of it very quickly, too. And so I think you're aware of that in the atmospherics of the city. You know, physically it's an interesting city. We don't have high rises. It's a comfortable city to walk around in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see where you are. You can see where you're going. It's a fairly easy city to find your way around. I know people sometimes have trouble with the traffic circles, but once you adjust to that, I think you're fine.
Okay. As an aside, I know that there's some discussion within the D.C. Council about lifting the height restriction.
Lifting the what?
The height restriction of the buildings in the area.
Oh, yes.
Do you feel that would change or alter the personality or landscape of the area?
Well, it would. It depends what the new restrictions become. I mean, you can drive across the bridges into Virginia, and you can see Roslyn right there in Virginia. You can see what, you can get a little bit of feel for what that might look like.
Right.
You can go out to Bethesda in Maryland, and again, that's an area that I spent many years of my youth in. And Bethesda was a small town. It was very similar to say, Vienna, right? Today is Vienna, Virginia. But now, with the taller buildings and the office building, it's taken on a slightly different cast. It's lost some of the small townness of it, which isn't to say that people might not be quite happy there, but it does change the character,
right.
I think, of a place to permit a major change of that nature.
Okay. So what drew you to the CIA?
What drew me to the CIA? Well, I graduated from Georgetown. Mm-hmm. I had gone to it was during the Korean War, and I had gone to a Marine Corps program that enabled you to do boot camp, and then when you were graduated, you were commissioned, but you still had to go through basic officer school, which was another 6 months in Quantico.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I was assigned to Japan, and that was, you know, that was the occupation force still in Japan. And while I was there, my then fiance was working in a CIA office here in D.C. And so because of her, CIA became aware of me. Here was somebody, graduate of Georgetown, about to complete his military service, return to civilian life, perhaps. And CIA was then recruiting. So they asked me if I was interested. Now, mind you, in those days we knew almost nothing about CIA. There weren't all these books and movies and so forth, television shows. And I knew that it had to do with dealing with the Soviet Union and our concern about, this was in the mid-50s, keep in mind, so this was, the Cold War was now certainly underway.
Right.
And we were very concerned about the spread of communism. And so, as they say, it seemed like a good idea at the time. So I joined. I had no idea it would last virtually to the end of the Cold War. I was literally sitting, my last job in CIA, I spent about 25 years in clandestine operations. I was in the clandestine service. Then my last jobs were more public, heading our staff, dealing with the Hill, dealing with the Senate. And then my last job was director of media relations and spokesman. And sitting in my office the day the Soviet Union dissolved, literally, the empire dissolved itself, brought down the flag, and there was no more Soviet Union, was a surreal experience.
Wow.
Just a surreal experience.
Wow. What was the tone of the city like? I mean, at the time, that was pretty much the preoccupation of everybody, the Cold War and, you know, us versus them mentality and everything else. I mean, once that goes away, I mean, it is a surreal moment. How would you describe what was the feel like? Did it feel like there is a new tomorrow? Did it feel like, was there a sense of confusion as to what we do now? Or?
Well, I think there was a sense, and it varied, you know, depending on where you lived and what your own, obviously young people would react different than older people and so forth. It was somewhat anticlimactic because that was at the end of December 1991 when the Soviet Union dissolved. But I think perhaps the most climactic thing before that was in November of 1989, the breach of the Berlin Wall, of the Wall.
Right.
When that wall came down, that was the crumbling of a wall heard around the world.
Yeah.
That was truly a major occurrence in the world. People were aware of that all over the world.
Right.
And I think by the time you had the dissolution of the Soviet Union, it was almost anticlimactic.
Okay.
I think it happened with a whisper, not a scream. And those of us, obviously, who had been caught up in the Cold War, who had spent our lives, professional lives, in the Cold War, certainly, yes, we experienced it differently. But two things. First of all, there were no victory parades. No one said, "All right, all of you who are fighting the Cold War, now we're going to have a big parade."
Right.
There was nothing like that. Secondly, I think the president, George H.W. Bush, 41, took a very good approach He said, we're not going to be crowing about this. We're not going to pound our chests and scream victory, victory, victory. And I think that was a very wise decision, so that it did happen quietly. Now, once it did happen, there was sort of a collective sense that with the Cold War over, peace would break out. There would be, I don't know if you know the phrase, but a peace dividend. In other words, now the world would be peaceful. Mm-hmm. I think even Bush talked about a new order and so forth. And as we know, it was only a matter of a few years before it was quite clear that as the old order dissolved, the new order would not be one of peace, but actually there were conflicts all over the world that emerged that had been frozen in time by the Cold War. And those emerged, and of course the threat of the specter of communism, of terrorism that emerged. So those happened over that decade of the 90s.
So why, we'll kind of stick with this espionage angle for a little bit and we'll move on. Why is D.C. still a hotbed of spying today? I mean, obviously in the Cold War was, because we were world capital, it was us versus them. But why today? Why now?
Well, I think the thing that you have to remember is that spies, there are probably two major things that people are spying for today. First of all is, what decisions are being made in the city? What is American policy? What are the things that are going into American policy? What is the, how does the Washington, I'll use that for shorthand, understand the world, and what do they plan to do about it? That's of great interest to other countries.
Okay.
And that's why other countries all have embassies here. And the purpose of embassies is to collect information. Many embassies also have a covert arm that will resort to spying and espionage. Another major target of any of espionage today, we certainly see this out of Russia, just as in the old days we see it out of China, and that is our technology, our scientific advances. I'm using that in a very broad sense, but our digital revolution, what have we done in the digital revolution? All of that is of great, great interest to other countries, because to the degree that they can learn our secrets, and they can learn some in Washington and some out in Silicon Valley, if you will, that advances their own research by months, if not years. And that's the great value of industrial espionage. So Washington as a capital, the place where the decisions are made, the place where intelligence comes, if you will, continues to be of great interest to people who gather information.
So do you think that, with today's culture caught up in, 24 and The Unit and, various TV shows is much more than they were in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Do you think people take that type of danger less seriously, more seriously? It's more on the open stage now than it used to be. Do you feel that the tone has kind of changed in that respect? It's regarding CIA and espionage in the area?
Well, of course, we're talking about, we're sort of looking at the map through a lens here, and we're focused on Washington, and then there's, quote, the rest of the country.
Sure.
So keep in mind, Washington was one of the two major targets of 9/11.
Right.
And so I think people who live in Washington and who've lived here for a time are well aware of that. And the pattern of the terrorists, of Al-Qaeda specifically, has been to go after targets that they may not have gotten the first time, hence the second strike on the World Trade Buildings in New York City. I think people are, certainly if you live in this city, not a day goes by, almost, that there isn't some news about intelligence, terrorism, concern over the progress of the wars and so forth. That's not true in every city, but it is peculiar. It is characteristic of Washington.
Okay.
So I think people here are more aware of our international obligations, our international involvements, if you will. So I think there is a greater awareness. But let me just turn the page for a moment to the museum itself.
Sure.
Probably 75-80% of our visitors are from out of town. And that's interesting because what it tells me, because we're continuing to be a very popular museum as people come to Washington, and we continue to be very high on the list of places people want to visit. Why do they want to visit this museum?
Right.
And I think part of it is to get a glimpse of that world, of espionage, national security, and so forth. A lot of families come here. A lot of families come and bring their children. And I think it is out of awareness and interest. And I think there's always a degree of uncertainty, lack of knowledge about that world. And I think this is one of the places people see to sort of satisfy their curiosity, try and fill out some of the blanks in their thinking about intelligence.
So you think that because of the nature of the city, locals are less likely to come here because either they feel like they know it pretty well or they're too immersed in it to really want to come to the museum?
Well, when we talk about the locals, here we're talking about Greater Washington,
right,
the metro, the Washington area. Let's face it, there are locals who haven't visited as Washington as much because it's here.
Right.
And therefore it's too easy. They don't have to, it's not a destination city, it's right here. And yet they haven't regularly made use of the museums and the tremendous cultural offerings here. I mean, there are people who come from all over the world to this city.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who live within a few miles who almost pride themselves on, you know, I haven't been to Washington in 5 years. That's sort of sad, I think. I am always amazed at people that I meet outside of Washington. You know, you travel to the West Coast, you go to the Midwest. I'm always amazed when people have never been to Washington because this is your nation's capital. I can't imagine people in France who haven't been to Paris, you know?
Very true.
They may decide they don't like Paris or they really love Paris, but it's hard for me to think of people who've never been to Paris or people who live in our country and have never thought to take the children to Washington to find out where the government resides and what it looks like. I just think that's interesting.
Yeah. So do you feel that it's more important for residents of the metro area to really visit the city more from time to time?
Well, here's what I see is many people who live around in the Washington area frequently are the hosts for relatives and friends who, quote, want to come to Washington.
Right.
And so they end up staying with their friends here in the Washington area, and they very say, hey, how can we make best use of our week in Washington? What are the best places to visit? Or, you know, what's the latest, you know, hot ticket? And so I think it behooves people to have, you know, to sort of keep pace with what's going on in the city, what's new museums, new galleries, new offerings. There's a tremendous amount going on in this city. You know better than many people the explosion of theaters in this city.
Right.
And just cultural events. It's a very rich city culturally.
So when you have out of town friends or family come visit, what do you recommend they come?
I recommend they all go to the Spy Museum.
Anywhere else?
Next question.
Okay.
Well, no. In all fairness, first I recommend they go to the Spy Museum. Okay. Actually, when they come to visit, they know about it. There are a lot of people who come here who have heard about the Spy Museum. The brand of the Spy Museum has reached many corners of the country and overseas. But when people do come to the city, come to stay with us, and they do, I sort of have a sense of what their interests are, and some of them would like to take advantage of, you know, going down to the Kennedy Center, go to the theater. And some of them would like to, you know, they're aware of a new exhibit. There's a tremendous exhibit right now in Pompeii down at the National Gallery. That's they're never going to have that opportunity, even if they go to Pompeii, to see all those artifacts and things brought together. So I try to keep up with what's going on in the city, so I can give people some guidance. And I mean, I love this city. So when people come here, I often will just take them myself. I mean, I like being, I love being a guide for people because I know the city that well.
Right.
And I just, I think it's a fascinating city.
What do you and your wife like to do when you have the time? Or
well, we cover the gamut. I mean, we're very devoted to the theater. Arena, for example, Arena Stage, as you know, is having a big remodeling, so they're working out of the Lincoln Theater, and again, an area itself under renovation,
right?
And also a theater there in Crystal City. We frequent the National Art Gallery in the East Building, you know, and particularly they will get a new exhibit in, or the Hirshhorn. And we will go to events. I have spent New Year's at the Kennedy Center, and you know, we will go to events like that. That they're just part of what the city offers. Restaurants, the explosion of restaurants in the city has been incredible. I don't think there's a native food of any country that you're not going to find somewhere in the Washington area.
That's very true.
It's not all Italian restaurants.
What season? What year? What part of the year is it especially? What part of the year do you especially love in the area?
Well, right now we're in the fall, and I like the fall. But what I would tell you is, you made the comment that, you know, I could live anywhere I would like, and that's true. But what I like about Washington is the change. I like the changing seasons.
Okay.
And yet it's a relatively moderate or temperate climate. You know, it's not New England cold in the winter, and it doesn't have that long, long, prolonged winter. And yes, it can get hot in the summer, but it's still not quite where Mississippi and some of those other areas are in the heat of the summer. So I like the change. And I when you say a favorite part, it's hard not to enjoy the spring here. This is a very green city.
Yeah, it is.
There are lots of trees, and the city does a wonderful job with them. There are lots of flowers and trees, and it's a great city to walk around in from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying the fall. I mean, right now the leaves are falling, and you know, winter is moving in.
Okay. Where do you think the D.C. metro area needs to improve?
Needs to what?
Improve.
Improve?
Mm-hmm.
I always bemoan the fact that we were perhaps the only major capital in the world that did not have metered cabs. And it just drove me nuts. And then the mayor, I think that this mayor, Mayor Fenty, is doing a great job.
Yes.
And he took that bull by the horns and said, we're going to have metered cabs. And there was a certain amount of wailing and carrying on.
From the cabbies.
We now have metered cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly people are making a living at it because they're still driving cabs out there. But to me, the contrast with New York City, where you could get in a cab and really have a very nice ride for $7 or whatever it was just very galling. And I think it was, since we are a city that's visited a lot by foreigners, you know, who understood the zone system? Very few people. And I think that the foreigners and the locals as well always felt they were being ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think that many cabbies were honest and tried to call it straight. Who knew what, you know, who knew?
Yeah.
So I think the meter actually makes for a better relationship between the professional cab drivers and their customers.
Okay.
That's one of the improvements. Now, and I have to say, it's already happened.
That's true.
So, yeah. But I think one of the characteristics of, I think, a great city, and Chicago certainly would fall in that category, London would fall in that category, Berlin, I was there a few weeks ago, is a good transportation system, a way for people to move around relatively inexpensively and quickly. And I think the more the city can do, I know they're trying to revamp the bus system. They've got a couple of new metro lines in mind.
Yes.
There's, you know, we're looking to some sort of train out to Dulles, you know, to connect Dulles with the metro system. Those are improvements that the people are working on. So we do see a city. We do see a city on the move. This is not a subtle city. This is a city that's well aware of mm-hmm. of its limitations. It faces the great difficulty of being a creature of Congress. And I think that's such a difficult framework for the city to work with for its budget and so forth. I mean, right now, Mayor Fenty and Michelle Rhee are taking the most aggressive approach to the school system I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And one can only wish them well.
So do you believe that D.C. should have voting rights in the Senate and
yes, I would be a supporter of voting rights for D.C.
Okay.
We've had D.C. has now had a delegate, but a non-voting
Delegate Norton.
Representative in the House, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who I think has done a fine job.
Yes, yeah, she's done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting, as you and I talk,
mm-hmm.
I'm now living in Virginia. I lived most of my years in Maryland.
Right.
And I've lived from time to time in the district. But I'm saying we have Eleanor. I speak as a Washingtonian, and that's just because I identify with Washington,
right.
even though I've lived in these various areas around. But I also speak as somebody in Virginia. I've been in Virginia the last, 20 years. So I'm conscious of being, of wearing that hat as well.
Well, I understand that. My wife and I have been here 3 years, and we already identify ourselves as Washingtonians.
But you live in the city?
We live in Virginia.
In Virginia.
In North Virginia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're in the same situation, but
sure.
I claim this as much as my home as anybody who lives in the district.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual, and there's a lot of people who do, follow that mindset. So, there's nothing wrong with that at all. So, let's step back to the museum a little bit. Actually, I want to ask you, do you have any plans what you're going to do after the museum, after you're finished with here?
People will say, how long are you going to do the museum? And I will tell them, I'm not resigning this week. So I don't know what to tell you. The museum has been a real kick.
Mm-hmm.
We've been open. I'm the founding director. We've been open since July of 2002. We have had over 4 million people go through here. So, and we've just had terrific programs and activities. So I've really enjoyed it. And it's allowed me, a professional intelligence officer, to keep my hand in the game. All right? Literature, and I'm called on to lecture a lot, be interviewed a lot. So that's been a really enjoyable aspect of being here. We are looking right now at the possibility of expanding ourselves beyond the physical plant or walls of the museum.
Mm-hmm.
There is a new world. You know it better than I do, the internet world, that world out there, blogging and so forth. And so these are elements that we're looking at making even greater use of. We started about a year and a half ago. We started podcasts,
mm-hmm.
which we call Spycasts. They've been very popular. We've had good feedback on those. So we're still in a growth mode. There's several other things we're considering that I don't have the go ahead on as yet. But I'd like to be here and see those through.
Okay. So as far as next year, are there any special plans or events that you can let us know about 2009?
Well, we'll still have Operation Spy, which is our standalone experience,
right.
separate from the museum. And that's picking up traction. You can do that, as 15 people go through it in about 50 minutes.
Right.
And people have thoroughly enjoyed that. And we're limited in space here. So right now it's difficult to put in a new exhibit. We are tinkering around the edges. We're looking at revamping the what we call the Ops Center, which is the last room on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen as early as this year.
Okay.
It's coming up, yeah.
Okay. And I know that more increasingly the museum has been subject of various media events, just like Stephen Colbert's report that just aired not too long ago,
right.
Which was fantastic, by the way. And obviously you've had De Niro come through and use the resources of the museum and making, the Good Shepherd and other projects. Do you see that continuing to increase as the museum continues to establish itself?
I think so. I mean, I think we're a venue. We are now a recognized place about the subject of intelligence and espionage. And I think we've had a degree of sort of favorable recognition by the intelligence community itself.
Okay.
They hold social events here from time to time.
Okay.
And I think that sort of thing is speaks well of the museum and its acceptance by the community. We've had some wonderful community events that people have enjoyed. We had that parade of Trabant cars here this past weekend. People stopped and enjoyed that. And we're looking at this year to move out into the community even more.
How so?
Yeah, right now we have a policy, which we've had since the beginning of the museum, that any kid in the city in the fifth grade can come to this museum free.
Wow.
And we just feel, we picked a grade, and this is an agreement we reached with the district government. We thought that was a good grade, a good age for kids to come. And now, that school group, in other words, they come by prearrangement. I can't have every fifth grader ride up on Saturday. We'd all go crazy, including
right.
the kids. But we're looking at doing some more community involvement like that.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. So, when we look back, is there anything that you could, would, or would want to change about your entire life experience to this point?
About my life experience?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything That's a tough question.
I know. Sometimes yeah. you need
I thought we were back. Focusing on Washington.
Well, we are. Back and forth.
Sure, there's always things that you wish you might have done differently.
Okay.
Yeah. There's nothing. I have no regrets. I'd certainly look back with both fondness and a sense of contribution at my career in intelligence. And that was my major professional involvement. Now I've been at the museum 6 years. That's turning into another career that we're doing. Among the things we do here is we've put out probably 4 or 5 books at this point. And I enjoy that very much, that process of that creative process.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any book plans in the future for yourself?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I have, in fact, one that I'm working on right now.
Excellent.
With another author. Yeah.
Okay, great. And just real briefly about Colbert's visit, not necessarily how did it come about, was it as fun to watch? It was very fun to watch. Was it as fun to make with him as it was?
It was just a delight.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert is a very gracious guy. He was very gracious with his staff. He was terrific to work with. He was as fun to work with as what you see on the screen.
Okay.
Where he gets the energy, I'm not sure, but it's there. And he's a very warm and easy guy to work with. And I enjoyed it. It was really fun having him come here and doing the program. And we all got a kick out of it. I mean, they were here really the better part of the day.
Wow.
They came down from New York. He was wearing a tuxedo. Saw him step out of that big bus.
Yes.
They actually came down from the train. And they were here from fairly early in the morning, probably around at least 8, to do some shooting in the museum. And they were here till mid-afternoon.
Wow.
They had plans to go to another institution after this one, but they were here long enough that they bagged those plans. So, and I think, I don't know that they travel outside New York City all that often,
mm-hmm.
but we very much enjoyed having them here. They'd be welcome to come back anytime.
You still have your medal?
And I still have my medal, yes.
So you are Peter Ernest.
And I am Peter Ernest.
Okay,
yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Good talking to you.